Case number 21-3390, Toby Lamb II versus Brant Kendrick et al. Oral argument, not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Green, for the appellant, when ready.
Good afternoon. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Jacqueline Green, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Mr. Toby Lamb II. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. In April 2018, Toby Lamb was assaulted by prison guards in an act of retaliation at Warren Correctional Institution, a prison in Ohio. The officers who beat Toby Lamb now attempt to avoid accountability for their conduct, hiding behind statements from the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction officials about how the grievance process is supposed to work, and the assumption that this process actually worked for Mr. Lamb. But the grievance process was not available to Toby Lamb, because immediately after being beat by these prison guards, he was transferred in the dark of night to a different prison, where he was thrown into solitary confinement. And in solitary, he did not have access to the computer system through which the grievance process typically functioned. And when he requested paper forms repeatedly from officers and the institutional inspector, he was repeatedly told that the forms were not available. Toby Lamb did the best he could under the circumstances, but the grievance system was not available to him, and defendants cannot be permitted to avoid answering for their brutality by making arguments about Mr. Lamb not exhausting the grievance process under the Prison Litigation Reform Act.
Which facility was he in when he filed the initial document, the IRC, the April 9th?
His initial informal complaint was filed when he was in Lebanon Correctional, which is the institution to which he was transferred immediately after
from
the beating.
From Warren to Lebanon, okay.
Yes. And so...
So why is that not inconsistent with this idea that he couldn't get the forms or whatever it is at Lebanon if he was able to file at least the initial complaint?
Sure. So he obviously had access to ICR forms, which is the first step of the grievance process. Everybody agrees at least that Mr. Lamb submitted one ICR. Of course, Mr. Lamb talks about two additional ICRs that were submitted, another one in April 2018 and one that was subsequently filed, I believe, in November of 2018 as well. But the issue is that once you start with the grievance process, you have the first stage, the ICR. He did two of them. He had several things he listed. The response that was given to him came through the JPEG kiosk system, which is not available to prisoners who are in solitary confinement. And so he never actually, or ODRC never provided to him, as is required under the OAC section about the grievance process, was never provided to him with any answer to his grievance, or rather to his complaint.
But they don't have to answer, right? If they don't answer, then you just move to step two.
Well, in theory, and there are different issues around what time frame within which he should have done that, but the thing is that actually he did try to do this. He repeatedly asked for forms from correctional officers who told him the forms weren't available. He then also asked as well the institutional inspector, who is the person under the grievance process you're supposed to go to if you don't get an answer to your ICR. He asked Inspector Laura Austin directly for forms. She told him they're not available. And
I guess my problem, I get cutting to the chase here, is there don't seem to be any dates or any specifics about when he did that. And so I don't know whether he did that within the time frame that he would have needed to do it, or if it was actually out of time. Maybe this woman was correct. I don't know. I mean, don't we need to have a few more specifics in his allegations or his affidavit in order to find that the step two was not available?
Well, for the step two process, I think it's important to note, and we filed this 28J letter yesterday addressing the different policies under which Mr. Lamb was subjected for the grievance process. Under the one that was applicable during the first or rather the majority of the time, he had to wait a reasonable time for a response. What's a reasonable time? It's not defined. Then you go to the inspector, you tell him, I need a response. Within 4 days, inspector is supposed to provide a response. So within a reasonable time, Mr. Lamb talked to Laura Austin. Laura Austin did not provide a response within 4 days, and he was asking for grievance forms all the way through once he was in Lebanon. Now, in terms of the specific...
Is that conversation with her name there, was that documented? Is there a dispute that a conversation took place on about that date and time?
Well, the defendants have actually not rebutted that conversation whatsoever with any evidence at all. They could have obtained an affidavit from Ms. Austin. They did not do that. The affidavits provided from the other individuals from DRC do not state that this conversation did not occur. So Mr. Lamb's affidavit stands, and his affidavit is sufficient to provide evidence in this case. And, of course, we're dealing with summary judgment. This is Rule 56. The facts have to be construed in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, Mr. Lamb. So for the purposes of our conversation here today, the conversation happened. He asked for the forms. He was repeatedly denied, and so he was absolutely thwarted from engaging in step two of the process. What comes next is step three, where you appeal to the general or the inspector general. I might be getting the term wrong, the top inspector for the ODRC system. And Mr. Lamb did do that. He stated in his affidavit, I sent a letter to the inspector appealing this. About the failure to respond, about all of the issues. And in fact, of course, there was no response from the inspector as well from the top of DRC. And yet again, with that fact, there's been no refutation at all from the defendants in this case, whether or not that happened. What we do have from the defendants are general assertions about how the process is supposed to function. But of course, they have the burden of production and persuasion here. That is what the law says. This circuit is clear on that issue. And they simply have not proven that Mr. Lamb failed to exhaust his administrative remedies under the PLRA. Therefore, it was improper for the district court to grant summary judgment to these defendants at this stage, particularly given the very early stage of the case that we were in, which was the very beginning of the discovery.
I guess I'm still struggling here. I mean, we've said repeatedly that vague assertions by a person who has to exhaust his remedies is not enough. There's no question that he didn't exhaust the remedies. I think the question is whether it's excused, right? So, I mean, what do we do with these cases that say these vague assertions are not enough?
Well, Mr. Lamb didn't provide vague assertions. He did, for example, in his first ICR, which we have an actual copy of, thankfully, for that one. But he provided a date of the event. He described the shift supervisor as being a person involved in these
events.
Well,
I'm talking about, we can go back to that because I'm not sure there's a lot of specifics in that filing either. But I'm talking about this, when did I request these forms? When did this conversation occur with Ms. Austin? I think these are key facts here. And you're saying he repeatedly asked for these forms. And I'm just not sure that's enough, is it, under our case law?
Well, in a case like this, where a person's in solitary confinement, it's not as though he has access to really much of anything to keep track of the days. So he makes these assertions. We know that it was in the time he was at Lebanon Correctional, which was between April and November of 2018. So we know what happened in that time period. And again, applying the reasonable time analysis, right, you know, that he waited some amount of time and began asking for forms. And in the same way that...
If it had been in November, I mean, it seems to me there's a big difference between April and November. I mean, if he's asking for the forms in April, okay. If he's waiting till November, I mean, that's a problem.
Well, we know it wasn't in November because he did, once he got to Southern Ohio Correctional, send another ICR asking about the status of his complaints. And he has this kite from the inspector at that institution where he's talking about having already... sent the letter to the inspector for ODRC at the top level and asking about his previously filed ICR. So we know it's earlier than that. But, you know, this is the same kind of issue as in the names of the defendants, who, of course, he does not specifically have in his ICR, in the one that we have a copy of. And when a man is hit in the head and maced in the face and can't see and can't name those people, of course we can't expect him to have that piece of information, especially when he's transferred in the dark of night to another prison in his ICR form that comes along later. He's not around. He can't figure it out. When you're in solitary, you can't figure out what day it is necessarily, but we know that it was in that period of time. And what this is a question really about, what is Mr. Lamb supposed to do in these circumstances? We have a case where these officers brutalized him, and they then shipped him off to another prison where presumably he was going to, you know, this situation would calm down, right, and go away. And he was in solitary where he couldn't talk to anyone about it. He didn't have access to the outside world. And these officers, if this court finds today that he didn't exhaust his administrative remedies, are going to be able to get away with this brutality, despite the fact that he tried to the very best of his abilities, repeatedly asking for forms, doing what he could, sending a letter to the inspector, doing anything that was possible from the circumstances in solitary confinement to attempt to exhaust. Of course, he was also doing this without access to the grievance procedure. He was doing it based on his memory, and he did a pretty good job based on the circumstances he was in. But what can we possibly ask of prisoners? It's absolutely unjust to allow this kind of brutality to go unanswered for, unaccounted for, unexposed through the discovery process, because of unrebutted facts offered by Mr. Lamb that are not taken in the light most favorable to him, as is required by Rule 56.
So is looking at the case and the facts alleged, as you have set them forth in your briefs and here today, is there anything that the prisoner could have, Mr. Lamb could have done in addition to further the notion of exhaustion? And then the second thing is, and I understand our precedent, but what is the prejudice here that the government suffers or that the prison suffers if we say that the exhaustion is waived? I mean, the requirement under the circumstances is waived.
Sure. In terms of whether Mr. Lamb could have done anything else, the answer is no. He asked a number of people to provide him what he needed to participate in the process. And he, as ODRC admits, you know, people in solitary don't have access to forms. What else could he have done? He asked for them. He didn't get them. He sent the letter to the inspector. In terms of prejudice, the state's not prejudiced here. If today there's a ruling in favor of the appellant, we go back, we conduct additional discovery. Who knows? Maybe they file another motion for summary judgment on exhaustion once we do some more discovery. But in the meantime, what we have to do is allow Mr. Lamb to proceed because he engaged in reasonable attempts to exhaust. He was thwarted from doing so, and he needs to be able to go forward with his lawsuit because otherwise there is no justice, no accountability. So the district court erred in finding the facts in the light most favorable to the defendants, and plaintiff appellant asks the court to reverse the district court's decision concerning officers Kendrick, Crowder, Carey, Maxwell, Hensley, and Reese, and to remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Lori Duckworth, and I'm here on behalf of the state of Ohio. The facts of this case are not related, but briefly, Mr. Lamb was involved in assault of an officer, which put this whole chain of events into motion. He had a felony assault charge tacked onto his sentence as a result of this. He was then walked over to medical, which happens after every use of force, whether it's inmate on inmate, guard on inmate, anything. And he alleges that he was assaulted out of the blue. Now, the problem here is very simple.
He was walked over to medical, which is a routine procedure anytime there's an alleged use of force. In this case, was there any kind of report of injury that was reflected in the records, or was it just he was checked out and then sent back?
There is some injury, and it is not. We haven't completed discovery to know whether that was from the altercation with the officer or where that came from.
But there were no other intervening events than were there. I mean, between the time of the alleged encounter and the walking over to medical? For example, he alleges that he was kicked in the eye. He didn't go play a game of pickup basketball or anything between the time of this and going to the medical, did he?
No, Your Honor. He was involved in the altercation where he attacked the officer, and they had some sort of skirmish, and then he was walked. So we don't know which injuries came from where for sure, because we've not completed
and
discovery.
And that assault, that alleged altercation between he and the officers, that was in a place that was captured by the cameras in the institution?
I'm not sure if there's footage of that, because this case isn't about the assault on the officer. It's about his allegation that directly after that assault.
I understand that's what his allegation. But you're saying that there was this assault on the officers, so surely that was, and anytime there's an altercation with the officers, then they go over to medical to check out. So the assault with the officers,
right,
captured on camera, he walks to medical. What's revealed?
Well, in between walking for medical, I mean, we, again, Your Honor, we don't know where those injuries came from yet. But the point here is that...
Well, before you go to the next point, it was never adjudicated as to who assaulted whom or how the inmate was injured.
Correct.
Never determined, isn't that right?
That's correct, Your Honor, but I fear that we're getting on a little bit too much of a tangent, because this is about whether or not Mr. Lamb exhausted his administrative remedies.
Well, it's not a tangent. If he claims one of the reasons he couldn't proceed in the grievance process was that he was injured, and in terms of the particularity of the allegations, he couldn't even accurately describe who assaulted him because his eye was injured and he was handcuffed, and during part of the relevant time frame, he was put in administrative segregation, which would have purportedly led to his not being able to respond timely in the grievance process. The question I have is that would you agree that there are disputed facts about whether the grievance process was available to the plaintiff or not?
I do not think there's sufficient facts. I mean, there's an issue of fact, Your Honor, but the standard for Rule 56 was only an issue of fact, then every case would go to trial.
Well, no, doesn't this case to a large extent turn on whether he didn't comply with the grievance process because he was not able to, he was physically unable to, or prevented from doing so by the prison, in which case, if it turns out, and I'm not saying how it would turn out, but it's disputed as to the availability of the grievance process. So if the process was unavailable to him for various reasons brought about by prison authorities, that's a much different case than had that not occurred, wouldn't you say? So I'm simply asking whether there are disputed material facts regarding whether the grievance process was available to him.
Well, I think that the cases went on summary judgment before we even get to that, because the only verifiable informal complaint, first step grievance that we have from Mr. Lamb was on April 9th, 2018, and the statement did not talk about the use of force. It said the shift supervisor lied because he said, "I refused my statement." Now, to understand, the use of force investigation that happens after these incidents is a completely separate process from the inmate grievance procedure. The inmate grievance is something that the inmate's doing. The use of force is investigation the prison does for after any use of force. So, I mean, this was vague. It did not put the prison on notice that this had happened in any official way. The purpose of the PLRA, amongst other things, is so that the institution is put on notice, given an ability to rectify the situation, and so that for judicial efficiency and administrative...
But you responded to that first... You responded, right? The prison responded to him and said, "You'll be able to make your statement."
This prison, this was during a time of transition in prisons, and I do want to touch on that because...
But you were on notice that something had happened because you acknowledged it, right?
Well, he just said that the statement was refused. He provided no details, and even if he couldn't see, he could, you know...
But the response would lead somebody to believe that there was going to be some detail fleshed out, right? Because it said, we'll take your statement. You'll be able to make your statement.
Yes.
So somebody at the prison knew that he had a complaint about something and said, okay, we'll talk to you about it,
That is for the use of force investigation. And, you know, we can't purport to know what he was thinking. He may have thought, I've just assaulted this guard. I probably had that coming. I'm not justified, but, you know, who knows whether he has to follow the procedure for grievances.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the administrative code, 512-9-31J1, which provides that in instances where the inmate has failed to meet the requirements of paragraph J of this rule, notification will be provided by the inspector stating the reasons why use of the grievance procedure is not appropriate. Did the inspector in this case ever notify Mr. Lamb that his informal complaint was in any way deficient?
His informal complaint was responded to, Your Honor. He talked about being able to give a use of force statement, which
he did. Did the inspector notify him that his informal complaint was deficient?
No. But can I please respond to the change in the administrative codes? It was updated in June of 2018. That's when the prison moved over to primarily an electronic system for grievances. So we were between these modes. But contrary to what appellant has argued, there is no material difference in those two administrative codes. It still says after 7 days, if the inmate's not heard a grievance, the inspector gives an additional 4 days. And in any event, and as you'll see in the magistrate judge's report and recommendation, there is no dispute that step one was waived on April 20th, 2018. And despite...
Was waived by the passage of time?
Was waived by the passage of time, and then the inmate had another 14 days to submit the next step. That's clearly in the process. They're all trained in it. He did not do so.
When you say they're all trained in it, you mean the prisoners?
The prisoners are all at each institution they're transferred into. They're
But why isn't his affidavit enough? I mean, if you didn't give him the forms... We take that as true.
His affidavit is vague assertions. I mean, if all it took was for an inmate to give vague assertions that he asked for a form and he didn't get it.
I mean, how vague? Is it vague? I mean, I don't know. It's fairly specific. I asked for a form. I didn't get it. I mean, are you saying he has to give an exact date?
He's in
solitary confinement, right? Does he know what day it is or what's...
And they do. The prison rules also show they... The inmates always have access to these forms. They just have to kite for it if they're in segregation. And he's provided...
They have to do what for it?
Kite for it. That's like an informal... They're not even preserved in records. It's like a note you give to the corrections officer to say, my bed is broken or any sort of problem.
See, all of that depends on... really relies on the prison people upholding their obligations to the prisoners. And you're asking us to assume that happened.
Yes. Well, this court has held many times, for example, in Searles v. Anderson, that the prisoner must make affirmative efforts and demonstrate that those were done in a timely manner.
And he says, I asked, I didn't get them.
Well, he doesn't say when he asked. He gives the one name of Ms. Austin, but he says sometime he does not attest to that being timely. There's just not enough there.
What's the reason, again, that the Warren Prison states for transferring Mr. Lamb time they did to this new prison and putting him in solitary confinement? Was that... What was the reason that they gave?
After every... use of force, everyone I've seen, at least, Your Honor, and I believe it's standard, they're transferred at the earliest possible time just to separate them from whoever the altercation was with. But he would have been re-explained the grievance process upon arrival at Lebanon.
And is there an affidavit from somebody at Lebanon stating that we covered ABC with Mr. Lamb at the time he arrived for processing and prior to being confined to segregation?
There are affidavits stating that he was briefed on this. I don't know whether it gets into the, you know, at Lebanon, at Warren, at each institution, Your Honor, although they are. Like, I don't think that the affidavit states he was trained at Lebanon, but it does say that he was trained, explained it at each institution. So I think this case is a lot simpler than it's being made out to. I mean, the first grievance did not even talk about the use of force, other than he said he wanted to make a statement. It didn't say that I was beat up. It didn't say anything. And he clearly could have filed his second level grievance as of May 4th, I believe, 14 days after the first step was waived. So I really think it's quite simple. I mean, Rule 56 cannot, I think just a vague affidavit is not sufficient.
Say it's not sufficient. Is there a countervailing affidavit that we look at and we say that one is less sufficient than the other, or is there no countervailing affidavit? Because, you know, we're supposed to look at this in the light most favorable to the non-moving
party. Of course. There are counter-affidavits where it appears that he alleged that he filed another notification of grievance, which the court didn't consider. It would have been out of time anyway, but it appears that that was not done properly. It's a little bit dubious for evidence.
But there's no self-serving affidavit from one of the corrections officers saying we didn't anything. We didn't put a hand on him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember.
No, I know you're saying we're not there yet, but I'm just asking.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you repeat the question?
No, I just said there's no countervailing self-serving affidavit from the prison official saying we didn't do anything. We didn't put a hand on him. We didn't touch him. We didn't beat him up. We didn't kick him in the eye. We didn't do any of that.
Right. No, there's...
And I know you're saying we're not at that point yet, but I just want to know.
Okay. No, not at this point, Your Honor. We've not completed discovery on the facts. But I believe that if this case is reversed, that it will be a very poor precedent. It will open the door for inmates to abuse the system, file something.
Now, you know, this case was on summary judgment, was it not?
Yes.
Well, why? You referred a number of times to... facts and issues that were not gotten to, and I'm just wondering why summary judgment was entered before discovery was completed in this case.
Well, that's in the interest of judicial economy, Your Honor, because if the inmate has not, I mean, the exhaustion is a threshold issue, and this court's upheld many times that it's something that needs to be determined by the court, not a jury, prior to proceeding with the merits of the case.
You said that if we were to reverse, it would set a poor precedent. But if we find that through our actions that prison officials can simply thwart an inmate's effort to exhaust administrative procedure, wouldn't we in fact be setting a very poor precedent in that instance?
Locking the door. I don't think the record reflects that there was thwarting here, Your Honor. Let's assume arguendo that the first grievance was sufficient, which we contend it's not. He gives no timing of when he talked to this Mrs. Austin. He does not attest to the fact that it was timely. And so I think that the exhaustion argument fails at the first step, if not surely at the second step. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a rebuttal.
To address the issue of the first informal complaint, it is not just about the use of force statement. In fact, Mr. Lamb talks about the date of the event. He talks about the violence that was committed against him, handcuffed behind his back. He couldn't see. Officers kicked him in the eye and mazed him. He talks about the supervisor engaging in misconduct. He notes multiple officers and that he wasn't able to give a statement, and he gives a location. There's a lot of detail in that first ICR. And the second one, which we have testimony about from his affidavit, he says that he talked about how force was used against him for no reason. So there are details in the ICRs. Of course, in the second step, the defendants don't dispute that Mr. Lamb did not have access to a kiosk, and they do not and have not and cannot rebut his testimony about requesting forms which were repeatedly not provided, including by the institution inspector. With regard to the issue of whether ODRC complied itself with the grievance process, whether you're looking at the 2018 version or the 2019 version, there are several ways in which DRC failed to comply. And, of course, if the prison's not complying with the system, how can you reasonably expect prisoners, particularly when they're thwarted, as in this case, to comply? Under the 2018 version or the 2019 version, there was no response provided to Mr. Lamb. The response was not timely under either version. And, of course, he was not given any opportunity to review and respond in appeal because, as we know, the forms were denied to Mr. Lamb repeatedly. He, of course, then attempted to exhaust on the third step. But ODRC, the inspector, Laura Austin, did not get a form or get a response to him when she was supposed to. She was obligated under the rules for the second step. And repeatedly throughout the process, DRC engaged in untimely conduct. I will just note as an aside that transfer to another institution after a use of force, in my experience with my clients, is not standard in every case. And certainly if it happens, it's not usually in the dark of night immediately after the event. Finally, with regard to the grievance process and whether or not Mr. Lamb was educated on that process upon his arrival at Lebanon Correctional or at Southern Ohio Correctional Facility, there are no documents on the record provided by the defendants that state that he was provided with this information. The defendants have also stated, and the documents that we do have, by the way, are from Warren Correctional and the Correctional Reception Center, which were the two places he started at, and they were nearly a year before this incident occurred, or longer, I think, for the CRC grievance procedure education process. But in any case, by the time...
Would there be anything different, though?
Well,
sure. What you mean something specific to... Was there something specific to Warren... Like who you would go to or something? Is that what you're saying? Or
well, we know, for example, defendants have stated that at Southern Ohio Correctional, it is a paper facility. They've also said that Lebanon was a kiosk facility. While here, Mr. Lamb, we know, didn't have access to the kiosk. There were all these different pieces and parts of access to the system that were different from institution to institution. And he was provided no education on how to obtain any kind of redress for his grievances in Lebanon or in Southern Ohio. And that's clear in the record at this stage. And so, in closing, Mr. Lamb attempted to the very best of his ability to exhaust the administrative process. He attempted reasonably to comply with the PLRA's requirements. He was thwarted from doing so plainly by repeated denials to access the forms and information necessary to proceed with the process, and he kept trying anyway. And we can't expect anything more from a prisoner under these types of circumstances. And so for these reasons, plaintiff appellant asks this court to reverse the district court's decision in favor of defendant appellees Kendrick Crowder, Carrie Maxwell, Hensley, and Reese, and to remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you for your arguments, and the case is submitted. There being no further cases for argument, court may be adjourned.
This honorable court is now adjourned.